Hello and welcome to Brain Trust Live number 193.
This week on the podcast, the oft-ignored Tuesday is waging an all-out campaign to usurp fan-favorite Saturday as the superiest day of the week.
Plus, Marco Rubio has delivered his final second-place victory speech of 2016 and life.
And the GOP's plan to stop Trump is now mostly comprised of hashtags and placing articles about how they have a plan to stop Trump.
Donald Trump has upgraded his rhetoric to include a threat to take America by force if necessary.
And the SCOTUS nominee gate 2016 is just a case study in the art of Clintoning.
Plus, the paper of record is now acting more like Fox News than we are.
And Pope Francis has joined Instagram. Insert hashtag InstaBlessed comment here.
We'll have all this and more.
This is Brain Trust Live. Hey guys, I'm Brent.
I'm Lila, and you can find us on the web at www.braintrustlive.com.
That's right.
And hey, if you're new to this thing, find us on social media too.
Yeah.
Like, why not? We're on Facebook, we're on Twitter,
Instagram.
We're on Instagram, surprisingly, still on Instagram. After many attempts to fail at being on Instagram, we're still there.
Yeah.
Got pictures of puppies, it's cute.
That's right. Go there.
Go there. As for the news this week,
oh boy.
We're into Super Tuesday number million.
That's right.
It was the super millionth Tuesday.
They were trying to do various different names for it.
Oh my God, it's gotten very confusing.
Super Tuesday 2, but then it was also Super Tuesday 3,
well,
really.
That's
so it was like, we couldn't really decide.
Some places included last Tuesday, or the Tuesday before last, as Super Tuesday 2, and then they were forced to go with Super Tuesday 3.
Yes.
Some other places had not counted that last Tuesday as a second Super Tuesday, and they weren't sure what number, how super this Tuesday really was.
I heard Chuck Todd call it November Tuesday, which I thought was dumb.
That was another one.
Because
that
it
was
has Florida and Ohio in it. He was like, it's all the states that we're going to care about in November. And I'm like, that's a stretch.
A clear attempt to get away from the Super Tuesday number strategy that everyone else had set up.
Nobody could decide collectively.
No, it was a mess. That was probably the messiest outcome of the week. Because nobody knew what to call this Super Tuesday.
Yeah.
It was not a great Tuesday for those of us in the Sanders camp.
Sure wasn't.
Was not ideal.
No.
We had talked last week a lot about how we thought he maybe had a shot at Ohio given his win in Michigan.
Yep.
Lost Ohio pretty bad.
Bad.
Better than you're looking for as a Sanders fan.
They called that really early and it was just sort
of
like,
it was so crushing.
Oh, man.
Well, they called, he obviously lost Florida. That's no surprise.
Right.
Big margins, but not as big as what we were seeing in a lot of the South. It was 64-33. The margin was sort of the medium bad variety.
Right.
Then we have
the predictable bad variety.
Right, I was surprised by how close North Carolina was, given all of the rest of the southern states, because North Carolina was 55-41.
Yeah.
Which I know in
there's a lot of bad. There's a lot of college smarties in North Carolina.
Yeah, that's true.
Too,
North Carolina has UNC.
Yeah.
Yeah. So I was surprised by that, but then the sort of crushing 57-43 Ohio loss, losing by more like 15 points. That don't let us be doing that.
Ugh. And Illinois and Missouri were basically tied. They were 51-49.
But he lost
50-49. Lost both of them. Yes.
Uh-huh. So it was a good night for Clinton.
Yes.
And it was Missouri actually didn't get called till the next day. Like it was that close.
Yeah.
That was like an Iowa.
They
style.
Actually never.
They never have officially
conceded just because it was like enough that where there could have been a recount, but it was like it wasn't going to affect the delegate count. So he was like, "Well, I'm not going to be an asshole and then make
exactly.
them recount." So he just conceded because he was down by a very minimal amount of votes. But
totally.
Yeah.
Some interesting outcomes, though, include the fact that the Times headline of the night was Trump and Clinton win votes, not hearts, which I think is not the headline that you want as having a huge blowout win on Super Tuesday number.
Yeah, because they both
did. Insert number here.
Yeah, we'll get to Trump in a little bit.
Yeah, Trump also had a big night.
Almost as good a night.
Yeah, exactly. But so, obviously, predictably, there was a lot of talk about how now Bernie is really, really, really done.
Yes.
But at this point, everyone has sort of accepted that he's not leaving. So it's getting less dramatic every time.
Yeah.
Like, I expected Bernie Sanders' Twitter. I want there to be a Bernie version of Black Twitter, too.
Black
I want
Twitter,
New
I
York Twitter, and I want, like,
Gay Twitter
and Bernie Twitter.
Yeah.
Bernie Twitter, we're going to call it that.
Yeah.
We can say that if we want.
Yeah.
I feel like Bernie Twitter was surprisingly upbeat after all of this because they, I think, were sort of like, well, we were always thinking we'd lose everything everywhere.
Right,
and
exactly.
we didn't lose as terribly as we could have, so let's keep voting. And also, they're looking to some upcoming states as having slightly better sort of just more in terms of time, I think, than necessarily demographics. But looking at having a slightly better chance in some of these upcoming states, they may not.
Right. They may
I mean,
not.
I don't know. They're focusing a lot of energy on Arizona, and I see why. But also the margin in the
polls
they're way behind there.
Yeah.
So It's not that he hasn't closed the gap like that before, but it's also like we're getting short on time, guys.
Yeah, it, certainly his path to victory is
looking slimmer.
Yes.
But we're committed to going to the convention. He has said that he is committed to going to the convention. Yeah. We are committed to voting for him on the last possible day of voting, as we are going to have to in California. So, hey.
Yeah, well, and that's what,
keep on keeping on, guys.
And, you know, Clinton didn't drop out until June when she was running against Obama.
It's the
and she was behind far enough that with this, the way that they allocate delegates, that she was not going to catch up. And she even won some of the late states. I mean, she won Pennsylvania. I think, didn't she win California? I'm not sure.
I can't remember. But I don't think she did. But
She won some of
the... California was not a late state in that election cycle. Right. We were on Super Tuesday last time.
And she...
The first Super Tuesday. The real Super Tuesday.
She won some, like, late Rust Belty type places. She won West Virginia. I mean, she won Pennsylvania. And she didn't drop out. And she went all the way up to the very end winning the state. So it would be rich coming from her to ask him to drop out, which she hasn't done.
She hasn't done. And some of the people in her world are starting to see the benefits of having him in the race anyway.
Yeah.
Which is, I think, now that they have acknowledged that he's going to stay in the race, there's some dissension about this in the Clinton ranks, obviously. Yeah. But there is a sense among some of her advisors that this is actually providing like a positive contribution to the way that they're receiving coverage in this cycle. You know, we have this candidate on the right who's sucking up all the air in the media cycle, but having a contentious Democratic primary at least guarantees them some coverage.
Yeah, nobody wants to go around and cover, you know, a Clinton campaign stop like they do a Trump campaign stop. So by having an actual competition, that's at least a little bit more interesting for the press to want to cover than her just like, you know, giving a speech that no one wants to listen
to. Plus, it prevents Trump from focusing solely on her in his own campaigning, and that's benefiting her as well.
Yeah.
Because you see him sort of starting to throw shade at Bernie.
Right.
That kind of deflects from her ultimate problematic.
Well, and I think that she has probably also seen Bernie sending fire Trump's way, too.
Exactly.
And so there's no harm in that for her.
No.
If she's going to end up running against him in a general, then why not let the guy who's running against you also talk about how terrible the guy is?
Yeah. Some of her advisors are basically saying that aside from the sort of free press that this generates for them, it also doesn't hurt that they know they have an enthusiasm gap. Bernie Sanders is the candidate that can help them close the enthusiasm gap. Yeah. It helps to keep him in the race as long as possible, to keep his people committed and enthusiastic in as many states as possible. Because at the convention, ultimately, they're hoping that a lot of those people will go on to vote for Hillary Clinton. And I know there is sort of like a growing never Hillary movement in the ranks of the Bernie supporters. I mean, we're part of it, so I don't know what we're acting so shocked about.
Yeah.
But that is something that I think is problematic for them. But the sort of final thing, and this is something that we talk about all the time. This is all coming from a Politico article that was basically, you know, going through the many ways in which people in Clinton's universe have started to acknowledge that this isn't a terrible thing.
Yeah.
But it's also, it's helped her find her footing on a lot of issues that she's going to be attacked on by the right when you know, November. Like,
well, and also things that I think it's important to say that she's had to sort of hone her answers on some things that she would have, if she wasn't running against Bernie, she would have had to hone them at the time during Trump, because there's some, as we've talked a lot about, and a lot of people have, there's some weird overlap.
Yeah.
So if she wouldn't have had to talk about, you know, taking corporate campaign money now, she would have had to have been doing it against Trump, which is weird to have to do when you're running against a Republican. But
especially,
I mean,
a huge businessman who's donated money to you personally in the past.
Exactly.
But that's the reality we live in, guys.
So, and there's other examples of that too. And this is what you and I have
always
said.
This is what primaries help us iron out.
This is what primaries are for.
Also,
this is how you get stuck with garbage candidates in a general election by not having a primary like this.
Yes, you gotta have a primary. This, I'm hoping, has at least sort of, I'm hoping that the outcome of this will at least be Democrats recognizing that a contested primary is always to the benefit of the party.
Yes.
It's never to the benefit of the individuals, but it is to the benefit of the party always. And that's something that we should think about going into future elections when we start, you know, when we start hearing people who are in, you know, leadership positions on the left talking about how we better rally behind so-and-so early, as Chuck Schumer did with Hillary Clinton last year, you know, or the year before last year, I think. That was 2 years ago. God, time is really flying, guys. But, you know, we want to be able to think critically about that and think to ourselves, is this really to our benefit as a party? And it's clearly not.
It's so insane that we would think that would be to our benefit anyway, because the last contested Democratic primary we had
really brought us our most exciting candidate in history.
Really did a bang up job of finding a good candidate that ended up winning the White House and then being reelected.
Yeah, no, I know.
Lest we forget.
We forget a lot.
We've forgotten.
We're forgetters.
Yeah.
We are. Forgetterers.
Yeah.
Yeah, guys, I know words. It's cool.
Yeah.
In any case, looking forward, we have Super Tuesday 4, 3, 7, 100.
Yeah, we don't.
Coming up on the 22nd. That's primaries in Arizona and Utah and a caucus in Idaho. There's not much recent polling for these races. In Arizona, there was polling from a couple weeks ago that has Clinton up by 30 on the left, and on the right, we have Trump up by 13. Neither of those are that recent, but we're sort of looking at a big gap for Bernie to close in those states. Utah has Clinton up 7, but that poll is from last month. And then the GOP side, they have Cruz up 24, but that's been an interesting one because in February, Cruz was leading there.
Rubio
was leading there. And in January, Cruz was leading there.
Yeah.
So it's been back and forth. And now that there's no Rubio, which we'll talk about in a sec, it's sort of going to be interesting to see what happens. Utah seems like a state where they would definitively go for Cruz after Rubio.
You would think so.
It seems like the people that would vote for Rubio there would be comfortable with a Cruz type candidate, but that's not going to be the case in every state. So that'll be interesting. No. In the Idaho Democratic caucus, they have Sanders up by 2. He's a good caucus or caucus candidate. So I would guess that he probably wins the Idaho caucus. And then Saturday, the 26th, we have caucuses in Alaska, Hawaii, and Washington state. In Alaska, we have Clinton up by 3, but that poll is from January. So who knows what's going on in Alaska. And there's no polling in Hawaii or Washington. Bernie's expected to do well in Washington. That's kind of
Pacific
one of
Northwest
his...
Pacific Northwest is going to be like a...
That's a big...
Yeah.
They love them some democratic socialism.
Yeah.
They were the first people that did a $15 an hour minimum wage.
Yeah, for sure.
They're not kidding over there.
Wasn't it... Yeah, they have a... Yeah, and they have a socialist on the city council, right? Don't they?
I think they do. No, they're up to all... Seattle and the Seattle area is up to a lot of great things.
Yeah.
So I expect at least in that area for Bernie to do well. And they have a little bit of a sort of East Coast, West Coast divide in the state, if you will. Their western edge is much more liberal. The middle of the state, the middle to eastern side of the state is much more conservative.
Yeah.
So they have some wacky shenanigans that go on at the state level there. But it's looking exciting. So, and then for the GOP results for last Tuesday, Trump is just... still killing it
to
the extent that Trump crushed Rubio in Florida.
I mean,
this was Rubio's firewall. I hate talking about firewalls because I think it's a dumb thing that the media makes up to add drama to otherwise non-dramatic situations. But this really was Rubio's firewall. If he couldn't carry his own state against Trump, and he didn't even get close.
Yeah. You know what else I hate the media talking about all the time besides firewalls is bellwethers.
Oh, I know. Fucking, first of all, I don't know how they think they know what bellwethers are in this election because shit has been crazy.
Yeah, there's
shit's
no way
all over the map in this election. Like, there's no way to know what a bellwether is in this state. What does that mean?
Well, and especially if you end up with a Hillary versus Trump. I mean, that.
Right.
The map gets confusing.
That's a confusing situation.
Yeah.
Yeah, because there are a lot of swing states that go definitive red or blue, I think, in that situation, and some other states that might.
Like, what's going to happen here?
No, I know.
Yeah.
It's some states, shit might get complicated.
Yeah.
So in any case, Trump won Florida, Illinois, and North Carolina. Missouri was basically a tie with him and Cruz.
Yep.
And then Kasich did win Ohio.
Yes.
Not by the margins you'd want to win Ohio, but that was a winner-take-all state, I believe. So
it at least kept those delegates
out of Trump's hands. But a lot of these other ones were winner-take-all states as well. Florida is a winner-take-all state, and I believe that Illinois is a winner-take-all state. So that was a big delegate haul for Trump.
Yeah.
Trump is now at 673 delegates. Cruz is at 410, and everyone else is in the 100s.
Right. Trump is over halfway there.
Yeah.
Yeah.
And it's sort of, it's the map's not looking great for anyone else coming up either.
Well, and the, no, it's not. And Kasich actually is, you know, obviously the only reason that he is staying in is because he thinks maybe he can't get.
He can't get the nomination.
No. Right.
But he's hoping that they can keep Trump from having a majority of the votes and so that they can have basically a convention where the delegates decide.
And I think that he's maybe thinking that he could at least catch up a little bit.
Yeah.
I mean, I don't know how he does that, but it doesn't look like Cruz and Kasich are not going to get the amount of delegates needed to win.
No.
They can't.
No.
Like, I think Kasich actually cannot.
No, I believe Kasich cannot. Cruz could if he started performing in an astounding and unprecedented manner in every single state.
Yeah, right.
Trump can easily do this.
Yes.
So that's what we're looking at now. A lot of the GOP primaries after this, you know, after last Tuesday become winner take all.
Yeah.
So that gets complicated.
Yeah.
And a lot of the bigger primaries are states where I see him doing pretty well in.
Yeah.
I don't see California going for Cruz. I know that they're nuts. I know the Republicans here can be a little nutty because you're like, who are you and where do you live?
But I see them maybe going for Kasich, but
I don't, though, because they're a kind of weird libertarian type.
Yeah.
You have to be a certain, just as you have to be a certain kind of Democrat to live in a Republican state.
Yeah.
That's what, you know, Texas Democrats are some of the craziest slash best Democrats on the planet because you have to be tough to live in Texas as a Democrat.
Yeah.
You can't be fooling around with moderate Democrat in it. Like then at that point, you just like might as well become a Republican there.
Yeah.
But in a state like California, which will definitively go blue, you know, I think the way that you define yourself as a Republican is a little different than it is in a lot of states that are comfortable with evangelical voters and evangelicism sort of as a whole.
Yeah, we don't have much of that here.
We don't have much of that here. People are uncomfortable with it.
Yeah.
They are it, the people that are voting Republican are either rich or sort of believe themselves to be future rich people.
Yeah.
Or they live in sort of like conservative but not aggressively socially conservative communities.
Yeah.
And I think you're more comfortable with a Trump candidate if that's your situation.
We
and Kasich is like a nobody. Like,
yeah. And we do have a lot of Republicans here who I have a feeling probably would really love a wall.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah. A lot of Republicans here are based entirely on racism.
Yeah.
So that's especially as you get into states like Arizona and California, you're starting to look at a heavily racist Republican party. So that's comfortable for them, the Trump wall.
Yes.
Rubio, by the way, though, this was the most exciting dropout so far. The rest of the dropouts have been irrelevant people that nobody cared about. Rubio was somebody who I don't know if you recall, but a month ago, we were thinking was going to be our savior here. And by we, I mean they.
They.
But,
exactly.
He decided to go an interesting route in terms of who he blamed for his ultimate loss.
Sure. Not himself.
Not himself. No. It wasn't him. Don't be ridiculous.
He's
He's a charming genius, obviously.
Right.
And he doesn't have big ears either. but it led to the best opening line of an article so far of this cycle, which was written by Jason Lingens. He's from Eat the Press, but it was on Huffington Post, where he said, Senator Marco Rubio, having dropped out of the presidential race after a campaign that could be best be described as existent, has begun the soul-searching phase of his post-campaign life. He's also ended the soul-searching phase of his post-campaign life, having definitively identified the real source of all his problems, the media.
Oh, boy.
Now, this is an interesting tact for him to take.
Yes.
Apparently, he was on a conference call with some of his Minnesota supporters, and he explained that the political press is really what did him in.
I love that he had to get on the phone with, like, the people of Minnesota.
To explain why he had failed.
Like,
because
he had to call the one state that he won.
To be like, I'm so sorry, you guys. You wasted everything. He said this election was entirely driven by national media coverage in many ways. When the media narrative goes negative on you and all the news is bad, it kind of knocks us off. Which,
I mean,
is interesting coming from him because I cannot tell you, I can tell you because it's been on the podcast, how many states he definitively lost, got in second, third, or even fifth place where the media was like, Rubio's the winner of the night.
Right. He won Iowa by getting third.
Yeah.
He won various
other
places.
Remember when they said this couldn't happen and it was a third place finish in Iowa?
Right.
That he delivered a victory speech to? Remember how he delivered subsequent victory speeches in New Hampshire and every other state that he failed to get, get into the top two in?
Yeah.
So, in any case, this is a sort of interesting tact because the media is really the only thing that's been giving him credibility this whole time.
Right?
It certainly wasn't facts.
No, I know. And I have a feeling that what he is implying is that they were doing was covering Trump. But also, like, A, he's not that interesting to cover.
Right.
And B, had the media been covering him as much as they were covering Trump, I think we all probably would have realized that he was, like, boring and terrible. So
I agree.
I don't think that...
The reason they weren't covering him is because there was nothing to cover.
Right.
He was just a guy with a dry mouth situation and very large ears walking around saying, trying bad insult comedy against the master.
Right. So if you're that guy, you would prefer the media not be there. So
because the one time the media was there for him was during the Marcobot scandal, and that was the one time that their coverage did him no favors.
Yeah.
But they gave him pass after pass after pass in all those early states where he failed to place in any kind of a respectable manner, and they still were like, Marco Rubio, the real winner.
Yeah.
I mean, I remember us sitting here and saying that Ted Cruz, we felt bad for Ted Cruz because he had lost the Iowa primary by winning. Or the Iowa caucus by winning.
By winning.
I don't feel that bad for him now.
No, I don't either.
I mean, I never felt that bad for him because he's an asshole. But,
yeah.
I mean, this is an interesting tact. So in any case, Cruz has also been sort of jumping onto this argument, claiming that liberal media is sitting on bombshells about Trump, waiting to release them until they can benefit a Democrat.
Okay.
Hilariously, Sam Biddle at Gawker said, so about a bombshell, please email it to me. I'll publish it today, Ted. That's my promise to you. Ted Cruz, give me a bombshell or even an old grenade, something, any kind of explosive device, any ordnance will do. Please, man. And I will let loose ASAP. But Marco Rubio a man who we may never hear about again because he has vowed not to run for office.
He's like dropped out of the race and of life, basically.
He's acting just like a petulant child. Just like the petulant child he looks like he is.
Yeah.
He said he doesn't want to be the VP. He's not going to run for governor. He said after January, he'll be a private citizen again.
Mm.
Thank God.
Can go back to racking up extreme credit card debt and getting into shady real estate deals.
Yeah, his best friend is there waiting to be indicted.
Yeah, and he doesn't have to worry about that because he's not an elected official anymore. So he can get up to any shenanigans he wants and he doesn't have to be charged with ethics violations.
No, he can just be charged with crimes like the rest of us.
Right.
And he won't be because rich people never are.
That's right.
So anyway, as he has dropped out, Ted Cruz is on the hunt to grab as many Rubio donors as possible.
Add this to the list of things that makes Ted Cruz the evil genius that we've always said that he is.
He's an evil... I'm going to separate... Let's not call him a genius. Let's just call him a sociopath.
Well, yes.
He's like... Yeah. He's not a genius because he lacks empathy. And I think to be a true genius, you need to understand something about the human condition, which he understands, but he doesn't have the human condition himself. Like, he's like lacking the human condition on his own. And I don't think that can make you a genius.
No, I agree.
I think he's an evil sociopath. And as a sociopath... Sociopaths, being a sociopath implies that you're kind of a genius at reading people.
Yes.
You just like lack the empathy to like know that what you're doing is wrong.
But we've talked a lot about on this podcast about like things that he has done with how he has spent his money and when he got organizers to certain states, even when he was way behind in polls and things.
He has been
very, very sneaky in pretty genius ways, even though you don't want to call him that.
Pretty sociopathic ways.
Sociopathic ways about this whole election. And, you know, it's working pretty much to his benefit. He's doing better than I think a lot of people maybe would have thought he does, since he's hated by everyone.
Literally everyone. There's not a single person out there except for himself that he is not hated by.
Exactly. So the fact that he's able to have the second most amount of delegates in a race that had 17 people in it at one point.
It's wild.
Kudos to him,
it's
really.
It's a wild ride we've been on, you guys. Yeah. His people are looking to lock down. They're looking to Utah right now as sort of a bellwether state, if you will, to see if they can get the governor there, Gary Herbert, to endorse. And then they also several of Rubio's national security advisors have recently signed with him. So they're trying to kind of like grab some of his people.
Romney said he was going to vote for him.
Well, yeah. So,
Because
Utah is on Tuesday.
Yeah.
And Utah is a state where they think, like we've said, we think Cruz can win. He's ahead there. And also it's the kind of state where I see them being into a candidate like Cruz. So his team is sort of like investing a lot of time and money in Utah, but he got a big boost on Friday because Romney said that he would vote for him over Trump or Kasich. Obviously Trump. I mean, obviously Romney's not going to vote for Trump. They're in like a weird insult war together. Yeah. But that was interesting to hear that he wasn't going to vote for Kasich, who's the most like him in the race.
Right. Well, it's Romney who has sort of...
But Romney's...
Romney is the one who has invented this vote for whoever might be
win.
Able to
Isn't
to
it
beat
hilarious
Trump?
That Mitt Romney, a man who has only won one election in his life as the governor of Massachusetts, is somehow like the godsend, like the guy who's like come to like unify the Republican Party and like put them on the right path.
Right.
What does he know about winning elections?
Not much.
Literally nothing. He's a one-term governor from Massachusetts.
I know. And here's what's like, how much does it pain him to have to vote for Ted Cruz, too,
well,
by the way?
I mean, this is...
I know, I get his plan, and I think his plan is probably the smartest plan that anyone has come up with.
Well,
we're going to talk in a little bit that there's not a plan. Everybody claims to have a plan, but
there's
we can't see it.
Well, but also, this is really interesting considering the fact that Cruz has routinely disparaged Romney in public for years.
Yeah.
Like, Cruz does not like Romney.
No.
But then again, and Trump also said that Mormons don't like liars of Romney.
Right.
So this week was not
also
a great question week
for whether Mitt Romney
was actually
a Mormon.
Yeah. A lot of questions from Trump about Mormonism, a thing that I assume he knows nothing about.
Well, she doesn't understand it.
No. I mean, I don't understand it. So like, how could he? Like, we're both from New York and we both don't understand Mormonism.
Yeah.
So sue us. But so in any case, this probably still isn't really a winning strategy. This Romney plan to like create an open convention and nominate somebody after the fact. But he's sort of like looking at a map that's going into, you know, heavy sort of industrial Midwest coming up. He's looking at a map that's going into some of the northeastern states. It's not natural Cruz territory, and he knows that. So I think he's sort of hoping that they can create a boost enough coming out of Utah, enough so that Cruz looks like truly the only alternative.
Right.
Because I don't know who he thinks is going to vote for, like in New York State, like
well,
do they think that people are going to vote for Cruz over Trump?
And I think that, he has like these very specific pockets of support, right? Cruz, like there are certain types of
crazy
places that are going to
like
vote for
rural,
him.
Rural, isolated
and
places.
And those places are mostly over.
Yeah.
So that's a problem for him. I mean,
Southern
that's what,
map,
you know,
was his ball game, and he didn't get it.
2 weeks ago, we were talking about, you know, a lot of people are talking about how he's the only person who can catch Trump. And then this Super Tuesday rolls around, Super Tuesday 3 or 7 or whatever it is, and he doesn't win a damn place, except maybe a close second or maybe a tie
in the
Missouri.
Smallest state
so
that
like
was voting.
We've got a person who is declared the one person who can actually catch him going through an entire version of Super Tuesday and not winning a state.
No,
that's going to continue for him.
Yeah.
So, that I mean, if you're wondering why people are thinking that it's only Trump
over.
At this point, that's why. Yeah. Because Cruz is actually not behind by an insurmountable number of delegates, but he is when you look at what states are left to vote, because they're not going to vote for him.
That could work in his favor is that a lot of closed primaries are coming up.
That's
and
true.
And you know, Trump is an independent
guy. He gets independent
guy. He draws the independent vote. So there is that benefits Cruz. But I just don't see who is comfortable with, like, I think that he thinks that he's the next sort of natural recipient of the Rubio people. And I don't see the
that
Rubio people necessarily going to him. First of all, nobody in the Senate is rushing to endorse him. The only two endorsements he's gotten so far in the Senate are Mike Lee, who I've met and is an actual crazy person. He's like a psychopath. Like, we met with him about 9/11 health issues, and he asked for like details about what it was like to rush out of a burning building that was crumbling of first responders who were there to tell them they had cancer and were dying. Like, it was the most insensitive question I've ever heard in my life, and he said it with like a youthful glee in his eyes. He's an insane person.
God.
And then, you know, Lindsey Graham, who's a panic voter, and Bush lover. I mean, Lindsey Graham is literally just in a panic. You can tell.
Yeah.
Lindsey Graham has declared support for almost anything at this point that seems like it's moving.
Yep.
Like, he doesn't know what he's thinking.
No.
But no one else in the Senate, and Rubio is, by and large, much better liked in the Senate than Ted Cruz. And so he was looking at wrapping up a lot more of, you know, their colleagues from the Senate's endorsements. And I don't see those people going like, no, this guy who I literally hate the most of anyone in the Senate, including Democrats, is my natural next move.
And those two spent more time sniping at each other during this primary than almost any other two people in the entire primary.
Because they were otherwise virtually
Trump
identical.
And Bush. I mean, those two really sort of went at each other through most of this primary. So it doesn't. That
well, because they were both mid-40s Cuban guys. It was like how one of them was clearly more evil, but one of them had bigger ears. So it was like hard to choose between the two of them.
And they both have big ears, by the way.
They do both have big ears. Yeah. Only one of them looks like the actual devil. One of them looks like a child, and one of them looks like the devil. And I would argue that neither of those are, you don't want man-child syndrome as the president.
No.
And you also don't want devil face syndrome as the president. No. So, like, those are both things that work against you.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. Trump has crazy eyes, but Republicans love crazy eyes.
Yeah, and crazy hair, too.
Trump has, no, it's not even crazy hair. It's just funny hair. Like, his hair is just funny. It's not even crazy because I feel like it's the essence of what is Trump. Like, it defines Trump in the way that it defines Trump, you know?
Yeah.
But the GOP establishment has mostly settled on a strategy at this point of just like placing articles about how they have a plan in every news source that they can possibly find.
Yes.
We have brought these articles before. The New York Times keeps publishing them because they keep having secret closed door meetings about their plan. They don't have a plan, you guys.
No, I know. They don't have a plan. And they keep having to answer the same questions about what's going to happen if they get to a contested convention.
They keep saying
the same thing. They don't really know. They also, even the candidates are saying, well, we can't deny someone who has the most amount of delegates.
Right.
So even Ted Cruz, who's not going to have the most amount of delegates, has been saying that. So I don't know what.
Well, so the Times is claiming that a bunch of conservative leaders are thinking of running an independent candidate. We've heard that rumor before, but never really confirmed by an actual news source.
Right.
It's worth noting that,
terrible candidates.
They're terrible candidates.
I mean,
here's
who
they're looking at running. And this is, you know, also Bill Kristol wrote a sort of memo to all of his Republican friends. By the way, what is journalism anymore? he's a journalist, theoretically. I mean, he's not. He's a columnist, but he's like a pundit.
Right. Yeah.
But like, what is he doing advancing strategy for the Republican Party? But in any case, he wrote a memo about how to register independent Democrat or an independent candidate in time. And then they started dropping some names that include Tom Coburn, who is my number one most hated person in the former Senate.
He's terrible.
He literally single-handedly held up the 9/11 health bill the last time. I had a very personal run-in with him, but also he's like an actual asshole.
Yeah.
And he left the Senate because he got cancer, and that's sad for his family, I assume, but also not sad for America because he's an awful human being.
Yeah.
He's a man who literally would single-handedly hold up healthcare for 9/11 responders because he believes that strongly in not spending money.
Well,
what an asshole.
He has his convictions.
He has his convictions, and they're terrible. Yeah. But he had said, he's already said that he'd back an independent against Trump, so that's why they're looking to him. But also Rick Perry, who you may recall as the first person to drop out of this race, basically.
Right. Failed candidate, yeah. Rick Perry. He was supposed to save the party once, by the way.
Couldn't remember the third thing.
In 2012 was supposed to do this.
Yeah, but after he couldn't remember the third thing and then couldn't remember how to be relevant in 2016, it's like...
Right. He put on a pair of glasses to make everybody think he was smart, but it just, it didn't
His makeover did not distract us from the fact that he sounds almost identical to George Bush.
Yeah, exactly.
And then Paul Ryan has already taken himself out of the running, but they were trying to toss his name around. Poor Paul Ryan. What happened to Paul Ryan that he's considered the savior of every emergency in the Republican Party?
I know.
They already forced him to be Speaker of the House.
I know.
That man doesn't want to be Speaker of the House. He does not want to touch that with it. No one wants to touch that job with a 10-foot pole. And now they're trying to make him be the, draft him to be the president?
Right.
Poor guy. I mean, I don't feel that poor.
No.
He's shown bad decision-making skills in the past, so he's not above making a poor choice like
this. It's nice to be in a position of power, I guess, if you're Paul Ryan. But it does seem like he was just sort of been, you know, unwillingly... just
being scapegoated everywhere.
It's like,
they're literally, I have a secret suspicion that they really hate him because he's being thrown into every unwinnable position that the party has to offer.
Yeah.
Like,
well, that's why I know everybody, when Romney came out, you know, with all of these plans and came out against Trump and sort of started leading the charge as the, you know, never Trump person, everybody of course started immediately asking him if he wanted it. And he's like, I don't want to fucking run for president
again.
Nobody
wants this job. What a mess.
Yeah.
But so there are some problems on the horizon for both the Cruz plan and the plan to run an independent and the Kasich plan of just hoping no one ever gets a majority and they can sort it out at the Senate. A lot of them are the new tactic that seems to have been illuminated from this article is mostly that they're trying to go after specific delegates, especially there are some states that send unpledged delegates. So I think like Colorado and maybe Pennsylvania send unpledged delegates, to the convention. And then there's some delegates who are in going for candidates that are no longer in the race. And so they're kind of hoping they can compile enough of those random delegates to defeat Trump. But for that to be the case, Trump would have to have a pretty small margin.
Right.
And he does not currently have
a
pretty
small margin.
They were
talking about this actually on Meet the Press this morning, and they were using Ron Paul as an example. Because he did not win any states, but went and, as we've talked about, made a play
always
at the convention. And that was because what he did was he was able to get a lot of those unpledged delegates pledged to him by the time the actual convention came. There were states where he only won like 6 or 7% of the vote and had up to 40% of
the delegates.
The delegates by the time the convention came around. So that is another ploy that they... But again, that's sort of shady in the way that would probably piss Trump off enough that he might, you know, come through with his, you know,
third party to run as a third party.
They
are really up... They're between a rock and a hard place.
They got to watch what they're doing.
I almost think it's time to abandon ship and start a new party for those guys.
People have been talking about that.
I mean, that's essentially what running an independent candidate would be.
Right.
But I feel like there is no way for them to... put off the specter of a Trump candidacy at this point. He has
no
incentive to not run for president.
Right.
So even if they don't elect him to be the candidate for the Republican Party, he still is taking a large share of their votes and could run himself. He's self-funding anyway. He doesn't give a shit
and
about
even
any
if
of this.
He doesn't run and they screw him at the convention and he attempts to play nice, he's got 30% of the party that is going to be so pissed off that they're either not going to vote for whoever the nominee is or they're just going to stay home.
Yeah, no, exactly.
Yeah.
And a lot of independents who probably will stay home anyway.
Yeah.
Because they need to excite some independent voters in this race because this has been such a sort of active year.
Yeah.
Like there's going to be some excitement at the, you know, I don't think, like I've said, I think that Clinton sort of diminishes our chance of getting like a truly exciting sort of like new voter base out. But I think that some of that will happen because of Sanders regardless. And like they also need to be able to compete with that.
Yeah.
And Trump allows them to compete with that.
Sure does.
But Cruz certainly does not.
No. I agree.
Meanwhile, the Trump protests continuing
going
on. Going strong. There were some more this week. On Friday, there were protests in Salt Lake City outside a Trump rally.
Yeah. They shut down a rally. They blocked off a street in Arizona.
Yeah, in Arizona, they literally used cars to block off a street. and then three of them got arrested and two of the cars were towed. But traffic got backed up for miles and people were having to drive on the wrong side of the road. And Trump was repeatedly interrupted by protesters inside the rally. First of all, he was at a rally with Jan Brewer and Joe Arpaio.
Who both endorsed him, former governor.
Of course, you have to protest that. That's like the worst trio of people imaginable.
Seriously.
So in any case, he kept getting interrupted and he, as he saw some protesters dragged out, said, "These are not good people, folks. They're not really protesters. They're agitators." Which is rich.
This is a thing that a lot of people on the right are now going with.
Yeah.
Is that people are not protesting him, that they are just going and they are, they're calling them agitators, they're calling them various things, that they're just trying
like they're
to
plants.
Basically like, yes, exactly. As if
people arrive at the conclusion
right, exactly.
that he's awful.
Right. And how would they be plants anyway? I mean, even if
and who's planting them?
An agitator is a protester.
Right. No, that's true.
So like, that's the same. That's the same
thing.
Person.
Yeah.
Yeah. That's, so
I mean, maybe they like, are agitators, but that doesn't diminish their right to protest.
No, exactly.
It just
like,
means that they're protesting.
If their goal was to protest and shut down a Trump rally, then that's what they're doing as protesters.
Exactly.
I mean,
that's, I know.
Deal with
he
it.
He also, though, basically threatened to use his army, his, like, Trump army of people to, like, invade America and
yeah.
take the presidency by force in this
yeah.
rally, because he also said, in response to protesters, we're going to win with our Second Amendment. We're going to win big league with our Second Amendment.
Oh, God.
In case you can't read the code there.
Right.
That's
a Trump militia.
That's a Trump militia that he's
right.
talking about.
Yeah.
That's a plan to shoot up America until we let him be the president.
Yeah, well, and he also talked about that if he has been saying recently and... establishment people have been really ragging on him for this, because he said that if he has the most delegates and he gets to the convention and doesn't end up the nominee, he thinks that there will be riots. But he of course then says, I'm not backing the riots, but
I think there
would be riots, which is basically just saying, hey guys,
riot if this happens.
Yeah, exactly. So I mean,
what if they have their 1968?
He's using it. Yeah.
What if we all have our own 1968?
Well, we weren't there for it. Kind of exciting.
I would like to have, I mean, I don't, I would
I don't
like
want,
to have a 1968,
right.
but I also want to make sure I'm there if there is a 1968.
Right, yeah.
If there's going to be one, I want to be there.
Yeah.
But so in any case, the protesters actually caused enough blockage that the rally people had to exit in the back of the arena, because they had like shut down the front doors,
yeah.
basically. And then there were also demonstrations in New York City, organized by a group called Cosmopolitan Anti-Fascists.
I love that.
Which is great.
Yeah.
That were marching up near Columbus Circle in Central Park. And they say that they are a group that stands for, quote, inclusion, diversity, and human rights.
Yeah.
Hippies. I wish that we were having some protests here I could go to.
I know, right?
I love a good visit to a protest.
Yeah.
And yet, I see... no. I mean, the problem in LA, too, is that like once you hear about a protest happening, you can never get there in
time.
You
have to get to it.
It's getting to the
it.
Protest that's hard.
Yeah.
I once tried to get to a protest that was...
I remember this.
Yeah, and I walked there, and by the time I got there, it was gone.
Right.
And I couldn't find it after that.
Yeah.
They told me they were marching up towards where I had just come from, and I was like, I saw no sign.
I was going to say,
and
it also may have never happened.
Reconvene at a place that I went and waited at and never saw a single protester.
Everybody probably just flaked.
It was a mess, you guys. It was a mess.
Right. They double booked
themselves. They double booked themselves, and they were like,
shit,
I did want to go to that pool party. God damn it.
Exactly. That's exactly what
happened. Todd's birthday party, after all.
Yep.
So in any case, now we bring you to would otherwise be the biggest news of the week.
Yep.
But we buried it second, because what do we care? We're mavericks. Obama has announced who his SCOTUS nominee is going to be.
And we have a lot of thoughts on this.
Merrick Garland.
Guys.
Merrick Garland is a man that his name has been tossed around before as a potential Supreme Court nominee.
Yes.
The Obama people were sort of keeping him in their back pocket,
yes,
as they
he
claim.
Was a, I bl- the, he was the quote,
glass,
break glass in case of emergency,
yes.
candidate. Like, in case that they didn't get either of their first two through or needed, at a later date, needed someone that they felt like was a compromise person. And
yes.
this is now that later date where they feel like they need a compromise
right.
person. So here we are.
He's a centrist.
That's
he's
right.
An appellate judge on the D.C. circuit. So he's a very powerful and well-known judge in D.C.
yeah.
circles.
And he's been on that court since 1997. So
right.
he was elected to that court pretty unanimously.
Yeah.
Because they have to, or approved.
Approved,
to, not elected,
yeah.
But approved by the Senate, many of whom are
still
in the
there.
Senate currently and either voted for him or said very nice things
and
about him.
And in fact, last week, Orrin Hatch literally said Obama could easily name Merrick Garland, who is a fine man. He probably won't do this because this appointment is about the election, so I'm pretty sure he'll name someone liberal or that the liberal Democratic base wants.
Yeah.
But Orrin Hatch is now eating his words
yeah.
because they basically called his bluff.
Yeah.
And
although Orrin Hatch has said
he's backed
that
away
he,
from the...
He's not going so crazy as Mitch McConnell, who has said that they're not even going to meet with the guy.
Right.
Orrin Hatch has said that he would be willing to give him
a fair shot.
Yeah.
So the deal with Merrick Garland is that he's, first of all, 63 years old. He's very old.
Yeah.
So I think one of the reasons they think he's a compromise is mostly just because he won't be there
not
very gonna
long. Not going to be there very
long. Right. He's not going to be like a Scalia 30-year veteran of the Supreme Court.
Yeah.
And he's been on the D.C. court for 19 years, so obviously he's well-known there, but he also has clerked for Justice Brennan. So he's clerked for a liberal justice, but he's himself is known to be a centrist. He is not great on criminal justice issues. And also, he, in 2003, joined an opinion that basically prohibited Guantanamo detainees from going into civilian courts and seeking relief there. And that the Supreme Court actually reversed that decision a little bit later. So that was a controversial slash potentially terrible decision that he was a part of. But he, according to SCOTUS blog, rarely votes in favor of criminal defendants' appeals of their convictions, which is kind of shitty. But people think he would more often than not vote with the liberal court, with the liberal justices, but that he's definitely... Well,
people thought John Roberts would more often than not vote with the conservative
members of the court. It seems like our, or at least my read of it, is that he's like a compromise pick for a Republican president.
I agree. And I...
And they've already said, and like, McConnell's still saying they're not going to meet with him and they're not going to consider him. So, like...
I'm a little upset by this because, not because he's a moderate, but, well, yes, yeah, because I mean, he's a moderate. Right. That's it. But what I think is going to happen, and you've already seen this, there be discussions about this. I think Orrin Hatch, when he said that he would be willing to have hearings on this, said that he would be willing to do it in a lame duck session.
Yeah.
And what's going to happen, because the Republicans are already saying that they're not, they don't have any intention of dealing with this. November is not that far off. What's going to happen is... At least if you could predict things now, which I realize this election season has been fairly unpredictable,
right.
But you would, conventional wisdom would be Hillary Clinton wins in November,
right.
Barring some unforeseen disaster. And then what's going to happen is the Republicans in the Senate are going to race to
approve this guy.
To approve this guy.
During the lame duck session. Because
they're... Because he's probably more moderate than, maybe more moderate than, and you and I were discussing this earlier, maybe more moderate than somebody Hillary Clinton would pick.
Right.
Now, I...
This is a strategy, though, that we have called Clintoning.
Right, yes,
That we call Clintoning
going
on the podcast.
Going in with moderation
and starting a compromise from a compromised point to begin with is a classic Clinton move.
Well, there are a lot of people who wanted a female African-American... There are people who wanted, you know, someone more liberal, and all of these things were apparently considered, but Obama decided to go in and just prove
Clinton
that the Republic,
way through it.
Clinton's way through it. And as you made a great point, because everybody's saying, well, he's just trying to prove that the Republicans are playing politics with this. But we already knew that
because he
floated Brian Sandoval, who's a GOP governor, and the GOP said, no, we're not even going to deal with him.
So like, why did we need to go through this again?
Yeah, we knew it was already political. We didn't need to actually nominate someone to prove that it was political.
Also, you made a good point, which was that if this nomination, like this starts our nomination process off on the wrong foot anyway, because if we do elect a Democrat and they don't approve anyone going into the next term, this makes that Democrat is now stuck with this nominee, basically, unless they want to look like they're turning their back on what our platform has been, you know, what our strategy has been this whole time, that they're now stuck with a compromised nominee that, you know, is still not going to be ideal for the people that just voted them into office.
Yeah. And I, as you know, you and I were having a discussion. I don't know that Hillary Clinton would have necessarily picked anyone who was more liberal.
No.
But I do think that she would have maybe done, you know, there, like we said, there have been a lot of calls for an African-American woman. Knowing who has sort of gotten her to the point that she is in this primary right now.
Yeah.
I think she probably would have nominated an African-American woman. It might have been a moderate. But I mean, I think that she might have
Condoleezza
at least...
Rice.
I know. It might have at least... She might have at least done something that is not like boring 63-year-old white guy.
Yeah, that's true. And I think that I'm sort of two minds about this anyway, because I think that this was in some ways going to be the strategy in terms of his temperament. Like, regardless, if Clinton if Clinton becomes our president, we're not getting a guy who's more liberal than this anyway.
No,
because
I don't
she's
think
not
so
more
either.
Liberal than this.
She's not.
And she's terrible on criminal justice reform issues.
Right.
I know she would like you to think differently now that she's been running and winning in mostly like exclusively black, you know, states that have large African American voter pools. But like,
we have historical
proof that she's terrible on criminal justice reform. And like, I also think that she's someone who, because she would be coming in with the same amount of like sort of the same contentious, you know, congressional situation that Obama came in with, because she's just as controversial, she would feel compelled herself to choose a compromise candidate. And this kind of gives her a worse point to compromise from.
Yeah.
But at the same time, I also don't know that she would have chosen someone better. Right. So it's hard to know. Wish I would like us to at least nominate someone younger.
Right.
That's my feeling.
Yeah. The only way that Merrick Garland doesn't get approved, at least at some point,
is if a Republican wins in November.
Yeah.
Because if Hillary Clinton or Bernie Sanders wins in November, you're going to see him the day after the election, they're going to approve Merrick Garland. Yeah.
P.S. If I were a Democrat in the Senate while that was happening, I would 100% vote against him.
I would just stop.
I would not approve that man.
Yeah, they should just pull his nomination. Yeah,
like, no interest.
Yeah.
But so, there have been a few cracks in the GOP's claim that they're not going to vote.
Right.
They're not going to consider anyone. We talked a little bit about Orrin Hatch. Mark Kirk is up for re-election in a purple state. And so he's kind of talking like maybe he'd consider it.
And really,
Kelly Ayotte, same thing.
In
New
presidential
Hampshire.
Elections, a blue state, really.
A blue state.
You know, he won in the Tea Party way. Yeah. And there's a lot of, we've talked a lot about this, about how it's a fairly decent year for the Democrats in terms of, we've got a lot of these people who were elected in the Tea Party wave in 2010,
yes.
who are insane people who got elected in blue states in an
right
off-year election.
Right after the Obama election.
Right.
So it was like a sort of rebellion election.
And I think you're going to see more of them. This is just two examples, Mark Kirk and Kelly Ayotte. She's from New Hampshire, which is maybe a little more purple than it is blue. But
It's not in a presidential year, really.
I think you're going to see more of these people who are from some of these blue states say that they should at least, they might not say they support him, but they're going to at least say that he should get a vote. Because if you're Mark Kirk in Illinois and you're running for re-election and you're being thought of as an Obama obstructionist, especially from Illinois, because he's from there anyway. I mean, you're going to be the most hated person running for public office.
You're not
there's no way you win re-election in Illinois this year as blocking
Obama.
No,
because
Obama's
someone would have
nominee.
To come to the polls and think, I'm going to vote for, Hillary Clinton.
Right.
Or I'm gonna vote for Mark Kirk. Like that's not how it happens.
No. Certainly not.
Certainly not. Especially
if you're blocking a Supreme Court nomination.
Exactly.
It might if you pretend to be a little bit more.
He's
moderate
already got a situation though, because that's just not a thing that people are up to.
No, I don't.
That's a hard buy.
He's not gonna get reelected.
No, I don't think so. But then again, who knows what's gonna happen? Donald Trump might be the president. We know nothing, you guys.
That's true.
We like all media outlets. Have no fucking idea what's going to happen. We know what forces led to this point, which is more than a lot of media seems to know. But we have no idea what's going to happen. This is a crazy situation.
Yeah.
But so we are disappointed in Obama for playing this game. We never think Clintoning is the right strategy.
Nope.
But I'm sort of interested to see what happens. I think that you're right that the lame duck session is when...
That's when it all happens.
That's the make or break moment. Yep. He has to know that too. Like, I wonder if this is just like one of the things that he's sort of floating, one of the people that he's going to end up floating in this conversation, because at a certain point, it may not be possible to continue to float this man if, no one is willing to give him a hearing.
I know. Yeah.
Like, at some point, that might have to end. Another controversy of the week related to the paper of record, the New York Times. You guys, we've talked before about how we're starting to notice bias in media that we otherwise trusted and thought of as unbiased.
Yes.
And obviously, like, we know that we have a bias, and we don't expect to see our own opinions represented in every newspaper in America.
We tell you that we have a bias.
But we are open about our bias, and we also try to include facts with our bias that would allow you to draw your own conclusions.
Yes, correct.
The New York Times is not supposed to have a bias. The facts are supposed to be the New York Times bias.
Right. And a lot of Sanders supporters have been upset because they feel like on many issues, and they've written a lot of things just over the course of the campaign, and they haven't been covering him as much as they've been covering her. Sanders supporters already feel like the Times sort of has it out for them.
Yeah.
And then a situation happened this week that...
was an open out for them.
Truly proves that they're right. Like,
there's a definitive bias.
This is actual... We have actual proof now that the Times is trying to fuck over
Bernie Sanders. Thanks to Matt
Taibbi. Because they did it... in the open, basically.
Yeah. No, exactly.
I mean, if you weren't paying attention, you missed it. But luckily,
somebody was paying attention. So, I mean, if you're sort of on the liberal, and if you're reading liberal media, you probably heard this story, which is that there was a story written about Sanders's success with amendments when he was in the House.
Right. He's known for this.
He's sort of like
the amendment king. Yeah. He's gotten a lot of very important things and pretty big things through. I mean, they reference one thing that he got, you know, like a $1.4 billion youth jobs program attached to some other random bill.
That's the game you have to play when you are without a party.
Yeah, at some point in the 90s, he had more roll call amendments passed than anybody else in the House of Representatives.
And that's really been his strategy. He's been in the House and now the Senate. Yeah. aims for modest goals attached to bills that he knows are must-pass bills that kind of slowly and incrementally advance his agenda.
So the Times wrote this article where the headline was Bernie Sanders scored victories four years via legislative side doors. And it was all about the success that he had, you know, and it wasn't a glowing article.
No,
but it was glowing enough that even Sanders linked to it. I mean, he posted it on Twitter.
His campaign linked to it.
And a lot of people in the Sanders, you know, camp were sort of like, oh, finally the Times is coming around.
Right.
Yeah.
And that was the case until they hadn't come around.
Until hours later.
Because hours later, they changed the headline, but also the content of the article. The headline changed to, via legislative side doors, Bernie Sanders won modest victories. So they downgraded his victories to modest.
Yeah. And then they took out some content, they added some content, and that's fairly normal to do, but it's not in a way that changes the entire intent of the piece. And we're going to tell you all the things that they changed. And it truly, if you would have read the version of it in the morning and read the version of it in the afternoon,
you would have had
two wildly different takeaways
of how successful he's been in the House.
And that's not normal.
No.
Yeah.
No, and you know, I think as we're going to talk in a second, their public editor addressed this issue. But as we were talking about earlier, this was not breaking news.
No.
So they had time to review this article before it went to print.
Yes.
And they did not, and changed it only after it had gone to print. So that was a curious
mistake. That's what makes me think. At first, when I was reading this, I was like, well, I have a feeling nothing nefarious went on other than the fact that, like, just some editor at the Times maybe has it out for Bernie or is just totally in the bag for Hillary. But the fact that it seems like it could have been reviewed and probably was reviewed beforehand makes me think that someone picked up the phone.
Yeah. Oh, yeah. It seems like that's what happened. Yeah. Especially
and
after
by someone,
Bernie's
own, I mean Hillary Clinton.
the fact that Bernie Sanders' campaign linked to it, and then hours later it was changed.
Yeah.
It was like an article that was getting a lot of publicity in Bernie Sanders' circles.
It was changed with no explanation.
Yeah.
Too, by the way,
they didn't note that there had been changes made, and there was no explanation as to why the changes had been made. But here are some of the changes. They yanked a quote from Warren Gunnels, who's a policy advisor to Bernie Sanders, that said it has been a very successful strategy of his amendment strategy.
So they lost that. And then they added two paragraphs. The first one being, but in his presidential campaign, Mr. Sanders is trying to scale up those kinds of proposals as a national agenda, and there is little to draw from his small ball legislative approach to suggest that he could succeed.
That's, by the way, editorializing.
That's editorializing.
That's not news.
Small ball.
Small ball.
Yeah. And then the second paragraph they added was Mr. Sanders is suddenly promising not just a few stars here and there, but the moon and a good part of the sun, from free college tuition paid for with giant tax hikes to a huge increase in government health care, which has made even liberal Democrats skeptical, which I don't really think it has. But they added both of those two things, which are huge.
Those are openly editorializing paragraphs. And this is not in an editorial. This was in a news story. So it was not like the Times editorial board wrote this.
No, this was in a news story about his legislative record.
A reporter who now has to defend this stupid story that changed.
Well, that's the other thing, too. The editors really screwed the reporter on this one because she didn't. These are obviously editorial changes that happened after the fact. So now everybody's like, oh, calling to ask her about this story.
Right.
And it's like,
she's like, well, I didn't fucking write that.
I didn't write this.
No, exactly.
So you've really let your reporter, you've hung your reporter out to dry.
Yeah.
Which is not nice.
It's not nice. No.
No.
They also added a bit where they call Sanders an effective, albeit modest, legislator.
Right. That was in the original story,
but then
they added something after it to sort of clarify what they meant, which was where he. So they had this line that said he was an effective, albeit modest legislator. And then in the new version, added he has enacted his agenda piece by piece in politically digestible chunks, with few sweeping legislative achievements in a quarter century in Congress.
I want you to right now name a congressman or senator who can say that they personally have sweeping legislative achievements to their name.
And he does, the VA bill.
Yeah, no, exactly. That's like, first of all, that's a lie. But second of all, that is not what being in Congress or the Senate is.
Yeah.
The sort of sweeping legislative achievements are not, that's not what happens, especially as an independent.
Especially not now.
Especially not now, exactly. Yeah. And I mean, you know, there are some achievements that you can point to in a lot of, you know, for a lot of things, for someone like Kirsten Gillibrand, you know, got Don't Ask, Don't Tell repealed.
Sure.
She got the 9/11 health bill passed. And these are things that were sort of like fairly sweeping legislative achievements.
Yeah.
But this language is not to imply that this is not the case when in fact this has been the case for him. But also the language that sort of belittles what is already just sort of inherent to the job of being in the Senate or in Congress is sort of troubling.
They also added in the first, or they changed a line from the first piece where they said that he was tacking on amendments to larger bills that scratch his particular political itches. They changed that to tacking on amendments to larger bills to succeed at the margins.
Yeah.
So he's only succeeding at the margins.
But this is like, you know, this is troubling because it was sort of, it like sort of openly reveals something that I would not have thought the Times was up to, where they're like openly editorializing their news stories as if they are Fox News.
Yeah.
This is what Fox News does that's so troubling. Yes. MSNBC does it too, to some extent, but usually using facts instead of made up numbers. Right. But the New York Times, these words matter.
Yeah.
And the story as written was meant to give, I think, what is a truthful impression that although this is not the same thing as winning a war,
right,
like that he Bernie has Sanders used the has processes used that were the processes available
to him.
That, exactly.
And it, so the, and which the
is
reason,
one of the things that is driving his support is that people know that even though he has never been a part of a major party, you know, in this context, and because of that has not really had those avenues open to him, that he has been effective in the ways that he could be effective. Right. That's one of the things that drives his support.
And if you're wondering why a little story like this, which doesn't sound like it would be that worrisome to Hillary Clinton.
Right.
But when you think about what she has been running on, is that she is the progressive who can get things done.
Yes.
And this story goes right to the heart of him being able to get things done. It talked a lot about how because he was an independent, even though he was very liberal, he was able to sort of make deals with Democrats and Republicans because he sort of wasn't attached to either party in any sort of real way. And it sort of really undermines her attacks on him. So, yes, it seems sort of like kind of an innocuous story, but also when you really get to the heart of it, it's not. It sort of shoots down her whole, you know, thing that she's been running on against him,
yeah,
is that he can't get things done. It's an article that proves that he can get things done.
Yeah. Well, and that's what I think has been sort of, that's the thing that his supporters know that his non-supporters don't know, that changes your perception of him pretty, like, the most dramatically.
Yes, if most Hillary Clinton supporters, or people who aren't paying attention, thinks that he's just this fringe candidate
who's never done anything.
Who's just out giving speeches and not doing anything.
Right. If you know about his record, which we, I mean, have an advantage because we knew about it coming into this race, but I mean, if you are a person who recently learned about his record is filled with some surprising achievements considering the fact that he's never been part of a major
party and that he's a socialist.
And that he's a socialist.
Right.
And also, it's filled with some surprising compromises with some people you wouldn't think.
Yeah,
exactly. You know, I mean, he works very well with John McCain on veterans issues.
Right, they speak very highly of each other.
There are ways in which he has bridged a lot of, like, surprising gaps because of his position as sort of like a free agent in the Senate. And that it was both exciting to see the Times recognizing that, but also that's been an important part of the story that has been getting skipped by everyone in their effort to coronate Hillary Clinton.
Yeah.
And that's why
certainly their effort to coronate Hillary Clinton.
Yeah, but the Times wing of the news, this is what's been happening here.
It is.
It's
I
not
know.
Even liberal. Like, I know that they always talk about liberal media.
No.
This is establishment media. It's not liberal media.
Yeah.
The Times is not liberal media, really. They're usually fact media. But this has sort of shown that even they are beholden to an establishment that they are a part of.
Yeah.
And that their power partially derives from their willingness to play ball with that establishment.
That's right. Yep.
And I now sound like a conspiracy theorist, but I don't fucking care.
Nope. Well, this happened.
This happened. This is a real thing that happened.
I was going to say, this is not... Yeah.
We didn't make this up.
No, you didn't read this on Alex Jones.
No, I read it on fucking Rolling Stone.
Right. Yeah.
Which I recently got a subscription to, by the way.
Oh, that's right. You were in your magazine.
In my, guys, I have ordered so many dumb magazines in the last few months. I've just been like, when I'm at work and have a few minutes of free time, I've been searching through those like discount magazine sites and have found myself ordering $5 subscriptions to, and I know they're going to screw me in the next year. I got to remember to cancel the subscriptions.
You're not going to. You need to set some alert or something.
I'm going to.
For,
yeah,
like,
I know. I've
for
set
next
an alert.
March.
I've set an alert on my phone already for
March
next March.
2017.
Hopefully that gets me.
Yeah.
But I've ordered like 1,000 magazines. I'm going to be inundated with paper soon. It's an obsolete way to deliver information and I sort of hate myself for doing it. But I love things.
Yeah.
And it's like getting mail. I love getting mail. Getting mail is so fun.
It is. Yeah.
In any case.
Yeah.
Moving on.
More media news. Donald Trump still hates Megyn Kelly.
And Megyn Kelly is firing back.
Yeah.
And by
so
Megyn Kelly,
News.
I mean Fox News. Yeah.
I mean, they both did. But Fox News really had their strongest language
yet fired directly at Donald Trump. Yeah. Because Trump tweeted this week, he said, everybody should boycott the Megyn Kelly show. Never worth watching. Always a hit on Trump. She is sick and the most overrated person on TV.
In classic Donald Trump Twitter language. Yeah.
So Fox News issued a statement that we're just going to read the whole thing because it was pretty sweeping and nasty. Yeah. They said Donald Trump's vitriolic attacks against Megyn Kelly and his extreme sick obsession with her is beneath the dignity of a presidential candidate.
I love that they're talking about dignity.
I know, right? Who wants to occupy the highest office in the land. Megyn is an exemplary journalist. Okay. And one of the leading anchors in America. We're extremely proud of her phenomenal work and continue to support her throughout every day. Throughout every day of Trump's endless barrage of crude and sexual or sexist sexist verbal assaults. As the mother of three young children with a successful law career and the second highest rated show in cable news, it's especially deplorable for her to be repeatedly abused just for doing her job.
Which coming from Fox News, quite a thing.
Quite a thing.
So then Trump fired back with his own statement,
which says, delicious.
Megyn Kelly is a highly overrated reporter and anchor that constantly disparages Mr. Trump with negative and inaccurate reports. Despite the fact that he wants nothing to do with her and will not appear on her show due to her extremely biased reporting, much of the program is about him anyway on a nightly basis. Which I love is him being like, see, I'm still winning.
Yeah.
In fact, Fox News has begged Mr. Trump to do a primetime special to be broadcast on the Fox network, not cable, with Megyn Kelly. He has turned them down. Likewise, they recently called for an unsolicited and unplanned debate with Kelly as the featured moderator. He turned them down and immediately canceled. On the Fox debate that Mr. Trump did not do, they received by far their lowest rating. Unlike Megyn Kelly, who resorts to putting out statements via Fox News, Mr. Trump will continue to defend himself against the inordinate amount of unfair and inaccurate coverage that he receives on her second-rate show each night.
Her second-rate show.
This is like, it's written in the language of real language, and it is entirely in the logic of a schoolyard debate about...
It's exactly the release that you would expect
from Trump's camp.
But it didn't end there.
No.
Guys,
no,
Megyn Kelly herself got involved of just the Fox News
because he called on her to not to get, you know, to defend herself outside of Fox News.
So on her show, she said, many shows get a pop if they put him on. I would submit to you, I'm the second highest rated show in all of cable news, and I haven't had Trump on in 7 months. It can be done without him.
And then he responded via Twitter. If crazy Megyn Kelly didn't cover me so much on her terrible show, her ratings would totally tank. She is so average in so many ways.
Yes.
She is so average, man. You guys. That's
so good.
A wonderful news story.
Yes.
It's terrible for America and wonderful for news.
I know. I said to you, I was like, well, if nothing good comes from this entire election other than maybe Trump taking down Fox News, then
we did it. Yeah, exactly. Then we did something.
Yeah.
Meanwhile, in our first bit of non-primary related news in quite a while, we have some news about the Ferguson federal plan to overhaul their criminal justice system and police.
So you'll remember after.
What if I just kept saying police?
police. Keep doing that.
Was there a word after that I was trying to say?
I don't know.
Their police, I was going to say system, but that's not. They don't have a police system.
Things.
Their criminal justice system and their police things.
That's right. Yeah. So anyway, after, you know, we had all of the, you know, drama come out, all the police things come out of Ferguson, the Justice Department.
Oh, it's hilarious, isn't it, guys?
The Justice Department went in there and they were like, guys, you need to do some stuff.
Fix some shit here.
It's bad here in Ferguson, by the way. So they came to a settlement an agreement with the city of Ferguson that the city of Ferguson was going to have to approve.
Right.
Well, the city of Ferguson didn't really approve it.
Didn't really want to approve. Didn't want to fix their police things.
They had a big debate internally about whether it was going to be cheaper to actually fix the things or have a long drawn out legal battle with the federal government. So there was some back and forth. They actually once voted on this, sent it back to the Department of Justice with 7 amendments. And the Department of Justice had told them that if they didn't pass it in its entirety, that they were going to file suit. And the day after they sent it back with their amendments, the government filed suit. So the Justice Department is not
fucking around with Ferguson.
So as soon as that happened, Ferguson was like,
never mind, we approve your plan.
We better pass this.
Yeah.
So they finally did this week.
Yay.
So hooray.
Yay for being forced via legal threats.
I know.
To passing do something a plan about your to fix your police things.
Yeah.
So the reforms include changing their policies on stun guns and on shooting at moving vehicles, and they're going to repeal some questionable laws, and there's some new guidelines for stops and searches by local law enforcement and that sort of thing. They also have to hire an independent monitor because they can't be trusted to monitor themselves, you guys, clearly.
Obviously, yeah. But that the guidelines for stops and searches by local law enforcement is huge because we talked a lot about that. One of the things that came out from that Justice Department report after they went in there was that in and around Ferguson, people were basically, the city of Ferguson is funding themselves by pulling over black people and giving them citations for God knows what.
For like, that's literal fake reasons.
What they're doing. So that's why the city of Ferguson was, had this, you know, felt like
they
there
had
was
to protect
such unrest anyway, because it was the Michael Brown shooting that brought everything to a head and, you know, caused everything that, you know, this...
This investigation.
Right, exactly, the investigation.
This unrest.
But it was all of those stops that was causing the unrest in Ferguson. I mean, Ferguson was like a ticking time bomb. They just needed something like this Michael Brown thing to happen.
To rally around.
Exactly. Yeah. So, tragic, obviously. But, you know, hopefully they will actually do some of these things that they're supposed to be doing. It's going to take years. They claim
it's
to implement them.
It's not a good sign
and
that they were so against doing them in the first place after what was clearly reported on as a flawed and heavily biased system in the first place.
But they did vote on it unanimously. But it was certainly because they just didn't want to be in a legal battle with the federal government.
Oh,
so,
boy. They sound like lovely people in Ferguson.
Yeah.
Nothing like the Ferguson powers that be to really...
But I like that the Justice Department is not fucking around.
Well,
because this seems like something that, like...
I think they needed to deal with this before the presidential election, because this is an issue that I think that Obama is positioned to press because his Justice Department has had so many of these and has sort of needed to establish themselves as sort of a take-no-prisoner advocate for people's right to just like liberty and life and you know, and I feel like this is, you know, this is something that he has already started to set a precedent on that he has needed to follow through on in a lot of ways. You know, a lot of people have criticized his administration for not being as strong as they could be on, because these things keep happening and they're kind of like taking this very piecemeal approach to fixing the problem.
Yeah.
But because the unrest is happening under him, like, I feel like we want to see his administration be strong on this and not fuck around.
Yeah. So it's,
and
that's
P.S. good. Ferguson, get your fucking shit together.
Really? Like, you don't go through something like this and then you want to not do anything about it?
Like
that's not the plan.
No.
God.
What else are you up to?
Awful.
Here's some happy news.
Yeah.
Obama's going to Cuba today.
Yes. He's going
to
be there for a couple
days. He has so much more fun than the rest of us, I feel like. He goes to Hawaii. Now he gets to go to Cuba. It's like, when am I going to get to go to Hawaii or Cuba? I've been to Cuba, but Hawaii.
You haven't been to Hawaii?
No, I've been to Cuba 3 times and I've never been to Hawaii, guys. That's a real life scenario. I know. It's crazy. It's madness.
Yeah.
It's like, what am I even doing with my life?
Yeah.
What am I doing? This is the first time, though, that a president has been there in 90 years.
Yep.
And that includes like 40, 50 of the, or 30 or 40 of those years were years where we were essentially controlling them.
Right.
Like, we essentially ran their government and just weren't bothering to check it out.
Yeah.
So that's great. But
apparently the Cuban people like Obama.
They really do, actually.
That, like, 80% of them have a high approval.
Yeah,
think highly of him.
This is what I feel like was one of the achievements of getting out of the Bush years, was that Obama is so much better for our image as a country.
Yeah.
And, like, that includes in places like Cuba where, you know, we even saw a Democratic president last further restrict our right to travel to Cuba. I mean, Helms-Burton was under Clinton. And so they had no reason to feel positively towards anyone on any side of the aisle. But Obama sort of gave them a chance, I think, to sort of think about, like, because he expressed interest in sort of opening up relations with them, but also because he himself is sort of closer to, I think, the sort of, he represents a kind of equality that Cubans want to believe exists in America and doesn't really, but, like, that's something that for our image to them, it's part of their rhetoric there sort of is about inequality here and about how, not like they don't have it in Cuba, but like they have really tried to sort of like say there that socialism has helped counteract a lot of the racial issues that they've had in the past there. And it's not entirely true, but they use our lack of respect for, you know, anyone who's not white and male basically as one of their talking points there a lot. So this was, I think, an exciting presidency for them anyway. And now that this guy's trying to open up relations with them and visit there.
Yeah.
You know.
You can sport an American flag down there now if you want to.
No one.
It's cool.
Yeah. It's like a thing that you can do now.
Got American Flag sunglasses down there. I looked at somebody wearing them.
Yeah, well, that
this HuffPo article poor had fashion choice,
but it's nice to see.
I agree. You know? Yeah, exactly.
Anyway, guys, we live in a very meta time. You might not be surprised to hear. Not just because we invented the concept of meta and the term for it in this time.
Yeah.
But also because we've now reached sort of peak anger.
Yes.
Where angry voters are mostly just angry at angry voters.
Who are angry at angry voters who are angry at something.
It's a never-ending cycle.
Right, it's very Inception.
It's very Inception style.
Yeah, yes. Exactly. So Frank Luntz, who's, you know, a famous focus grouper,
right,
was focus grouping in Florida after the Florida primaries.
Right.
And they were talking to people, and he asked everybody in the room who was mad as hell, and everyone raised their hands.
But listen, I would have raised my hand.
I know, right?
If he asked me who was mad at hell, I've been like, yeah, I am.
But one woman specifically had to clarify, and she said, "But I'm mad at the voters. I'm not mad at the candidates. People are voting for them. And I'm angry for people that settle for sound bites for their information." So people are not mad at Trump. They're mad at the people who are supporting Trump, which I think is actually a fair response.
I agree. Yeah. Listen, it's not Trump's fault that he's a megalomaniac crazy person.
Right.
He can't help that.
Yeah.
He literally is that. That's how his brain works.
Yeah.
It's your fault if you're willing to vote for him.
Sure is.
That's certainly your fault. That's on you.
Yeah.
He's not even offering... And, like, I think, you know, this is the mentality that even some of the left is directing towards Sanders supporters because, you know, Sanders talks in very soaring terms a lot of the time.
Yeah.
But I would argue that he is talking about established policy objectives that have worked in other places.
Yes.
And that because of that, he's able to telegraph what the specifics are in a way that Trump talking in total crazy town nonsense language is not.
That's right. Trump is selling steaks, for God's sake.
He's literally selling himself.
Yeah.
He's selling his name.
Yeah.
That's this whole thing is a long infomercial for his name.
Yeah.
Which is in itself an infomercial for the products that his name is on.
Yes.
It's a really clever strategy that's also
good
very
strategy.
Very cynical.
Yeah.
But so in any case, the voters there also said, one of them said, "I cannot support the Republican Party as it currently exists. It's time. I'm fed up. It's time." And then someone said, "You want to do something about it? It's truly time to start a third party. This election is gone. I will not vote for Hillary. I will not vote for Trump."
Yeah.
And at the end of the segment, Luntz asked what each candidate would have to do to win over people's votes. And for Clinton, they said she needs to, quote, come clean from the political script and, quote, just show her heart and show some authenticity, because that's what they're mad about, is that they don't believe her.
And for Trump, he said he absolutely has to show humility, although he's as likely to do that as I am to pass up a buffet.
So that's quality voters right there in the,
there you go. The
Frank Luntz focus group.
Yep.
I'm pretty likely to pass up a buffet, I would say, as someone.
Yeah, you're not a buffet.
I'm not a buffet either. Person. Although if it's a buffet of baked goods, that's a different kind of buffet.
It is.
I'm willing to go to any.
Usually buffets have a buffet of
I know,
baked goods.
But a lot of the time, like, I'm willing to go to any level of hygienic chocolate fountain. Like, without question.
Oh, for sure.
Like, I'm not afraid of a disgusting chocolate fountain that's recycling chocolate.
It's the most germiest
cesspool of chocolate in the world.
It's got kid snot in it.
Yeah,
it's got
but, like,
God knows what else.
I'll still eat almost anything covered in chocolate from a tree.
Treat,
of course.
Know.
I'm not insane.
Yeah.
But I'm not trying to eat, like, some sort of shrimp platter from, you know.
Right,
like, I'm
sure.
Not trying to eat real
endless
food.
Endless fried shrimp.
Endless fried shrimp. Well, especially because I'm allergic to shrimp, but
questionable crab legs.
Yeah, or, like,
these are always the things that are being highlighted on on buffets.
I'm willing to eat like a pancake from a buffet.
Yeah, sure.
Like, well, who's going to be harmed by a pancake? A piece of bacon, even. I'll maybe even venture that far. But like, I'm not trying to. I'm trying to pass up buffets, is what I'm saying. So that comparison didn't work for me.
Yeah.
Anyway, in final news, Pope Francis joined Instagram.
Oh my.
So
yeah,
now you can feel hashtag blessed all the time.
That's right. Just in time for Easter.
Just in time for Easter. Oh, yeah.
Ooh, next week, I'll get to explain what Easter is to you.
Yes, again.
For like the fourth year in a row.
If you haven't been following the podcast for all 4 years of us doing the podcast, by the way, we missed our 4-year anniversary, but it happened.
Yeah. We were so caught up in
every year on Easter,
Super Tuesday 3 that we.
I asked Brent. That's our name together.
That is.
I asked Brent to explain to me what Easter celebrates. And then every year, the day after Easter, I forget what he said.
That's right.
And this year is shaping up to be just that kind of year.
You don't remember, do you?
No. I have no idea what Easter celebrates.
Perfect.
It celebrates
Cadbury cream eggs for you.
Well, it's the holiday of Cadbury cream eggs. And that's, by the way, an important holiday in my calendar.
You. I know it is.
Yeah, not to diminish Easter, just because I don't know what it technically celebrates.
Yeah.
It's an important holiday in a sense.
Yeah.
But I couldn't tell you what it celebrates in the sort of Christian tradition or the mythological sense or really anything at all.
I'll tell you next week. We'll have Easter story time.
Perfect. Perfect. I guarantee I will remember at the point that I finally know that I think it sounds insane.
Oh, you'll think it sounds insane.
Yeah, it's. I recall it being an insane story.
Yeah, there's people that
I don't
from
know details of, but I. Yeah, yeah so, no, I it's mean, it's that's insanity. In any case, the Pope said, "I am beginning a new journey on Instagram to walk with you along the path of mercy and the tenderness of God," and then he posted a picture of him praying.
Yep.
Got a lot of followers real quick.
That's right. Within a couple hours, he had 575,000, and he now has up to 1.4 million. That was
if only
the
it were
check
that
of a couple
easy,
hours
guys.
Ago. Right?
We have God. So few Instagram followers.
It's
and
upsetting.
We have been trying to post pictures of things that are interesting.
We have as many cute dogs on Instagram
as you can have.
As anybody does.
Yeah.
With 10 times more followers than we do.
Exactly.
So tell your friends.
Tell your friends.
Guys.
Cute dog pictures available on Branches Live's
Come
Instagram
on.
Account.
Yeah.
Plus,
and sometimes
interesting
goofy,
political updates.
Right? And goofy pictures of Ted Cruz sometimes.
Yeah. No, I mean, all the things are there.
Yeah.
Sometimes there's even goofy pictures of us when that's things true. Get real crazy. I mean,
there
there's a lot going on there.
Yeah.
I'd recommend it.
Yeah.
But so, in any case, he decided the Vatican's Secretariat for Communications said that the Pope decided to branch out to Instagram because of his, quote, conviction that pictures can reveal many things that words can't.
Well, he's not wrong there.
I guess. I don't know in what context the Pope is able to claim that. Like, is a picture of him praying on Instagram a more effective way to communicate that he prays as the Pope than saying I'm the Pope?
Nope.
Just the fact that he is the Pope makes me think that he probably prays a lot.
Prays a lot.
And it's a lot of his life
he better be.
Praying. I mean, right. He didn't earn being Pope by not praying a lot.
That's right.
In any case, that's the news this week, you guys.
Yeah.
Next week, it'll be Super Tuesday 500.
That's right.
Over here at Brain Trust Live.
And a Super...
Super
Saturday.
Saturday,
too.
We get a Super Tuesday and a Super Saturday next week.
We haven't had a sequel to Super Saturday.
No, I'm excited to see what they come up with on the nicknaming front.
Well, it should always be Super Saturday, guys.
Yeah, that's the alliteration.
It's
we were
terrific
pitching
Tuesday
Terrific Tuesday.
Or something like that.
Or
anything. I mean,
Tragic Tuesday.
this
week was Tragic Tuesday. Yeah. But in any case, why don't you tweet your thoughts about what we could call Tuesday from now on to us. We're at Brain Trust Live on Twitter. And until then... Until next week when we have all these results, we will be in communication via our many social media channels.
Yeah,
all right. Talk to you next week.
Bye.
Bye.